I'm Coach Stu Southworth of Boise, Idaho. Okay, I'd like to introduce Coach Price, who attended high school in Granada Hills, California, in the Los Angeles Basin. Larry went to the University of Southern California in 1982, played for Coach Rod Dado, and he was teammates with Coach with Mark McGuire and Randy Johnson. Now, his coaching record is the best of the 1990 decade for the state of Idaho, having coached his teams to 5 consecutive Class A high school titles at both Boise High and Timberline High Schools the past 2 years. I forgot to mention that Larry's 2 years playing for legendary Coach Ed Sheff, who is coach of Lewis and Clark State College in Lewiston, Idaho. Coach Larry and I have worked together in Legion Ball since the summer of 1992, and we've come together to co-author a series of 5 videos, believing that these are baseball areas which need great emphasis and clarification and have been for many, many years neglected at every level. One day I went to Los Angeles to see a baseball game, a traditional rivalry between UCLA and USC. And I sat down in Dado Field in the seat marked Rod Dado, who was sitting next to his wife. And I commented to him that we were doing a book on the defensive signs in baseball. And I kind of chuckled and I said, "Rod, did you know there are twice as many defensive signs and plays as there are offensive?" And he looked at me and said, "Well, I guess that makes defense twice as important as offense." Well, most baseball teams know of and use no more than 10 defensive plays during a season, which require a signal to start and execute. As baseball progressed from 1875 to the present year, the game became more and more complex offensively. So as the offense gradually learned the 28 plays, which were covered in a previous video, these 28 plays were used to advance a runner and score, while the defenses had to keep up or ahead of them. So they gradually found 55 ways to fool and stop offensive plays. So the defense has developed twice as many plays as the offense, as Rod said. With a little practice on some of these 55 plays, defenses can kill an inning and keep down scoring.
The first section, what we're going to talk about here is giving signs, whether it be from the coach to the infielder, infielder to the outfielder, catcher to the pitcher, or coach to the catcher. And we'll start off with that first. When we talk about giving signs, you'll see people, when you watch a major league game or a college game, you'll see people touching themselves a lot in a manner of where it looks like they're giving communication non-verbally. Sometimes people just don't understand what that is. And what I want to talk about is the sequence of what goes on there, how to read what signs you're doing, and with the whole outlining reason being to not let the other team know what you're doing, whether it be calling a pitch, calling a defense or offensive play out on the field, or whatever the case may be. For example, when a coach is giving signs to the catcher, a lot of times in baseball you'll see the catcher turn over and look at in the dugout for a sign for what pitch the pitcher should throw next. And that could be a variation of a whole thing, a whole bunch of different things. The coach might want to throw a fastball, curveball, changeup, split-fingered fastball, whatever pitches, knuckleball they might have. And the reason why this is done is a lot of times the coaches have been around for years and years and they know hitters more than maybe the high school or the college player does, or even the little league player. And a lot of coaches like to call the pitches for the game just for that reason. They've been around, they know the umpires, they know what they've seen the hitter's tendencies. This hitter might have been in the program and played against them for the last 3 years, where the pitcher and catcher might be their first year playing at this level and don't know the situation as well as the coach. So that's why I think it's important, and a lot of coaches think it's important, to call the game for these guys. And it could be a simple sequence, and I'll go through some signs here. It could be your indicator is the hat. What I mean by indicator is as soon as you touch the hat, the next sign after that is the hot call. And what I mean by hot call is that's the pitch we want to do, or the location, and I'll talk about that also. So if my indicator was the hat, And if my chin, first say, is my fastball, my heart, my curveball pitch, and my belt, my third pitch, whether it's a changeup, split finger, or whatever, that's how we could relay what pitch we want to call from the dugout to the catcher to have the pitcher throw. So if the hat was the indicator, chin, fastball, heart, curveball, belt, third pitch, this is what would have, I haven't touched my hat yet, so this means nothing. As soon as I hit my hat, and if I go to my chest, and then I continue to touch, that would be, I want to have them throw a curveball. If I do this motion, that would be fastball. If I touch here, touch my hat to my belt, that would be third pitch. So it could, hopefully they don't know what our indicator is, and this is just one way of giving signs. Now people can be creative and do it in different ways, but that's, for example, what we would like to do, okay? And we could do maybe a touch of which shoulder after the indicator or whatever, as far as inside or outside, or up or down, depending on what you want to do. And again, that's at a coach's choice of how they want to try to communicate that non-verbally to the catcher to call the pitch. So if I was to give a fastball call to the catcher, he would then look at me and then be ready to give the call to the pitcher of what we want to throw in this situation. We might want to have also two more signs in our repertoire as far as giving it to the catcher so the pitcher is aware of what we're doing. And that would be the pitch out and the pick off. And when we do these things, we have to know as a coach, relaying it to the catcher, to have different spots for the pickoff other than the pitch out, because they're two different pitches in baseball. And now if this is the indicator, fastball, curveball, changeup, or whatever the case may be, we might go right ear, pitch out, left ear, after the indicator could be the pickoff play. So if as a coach, if I relay this to my batter or my catcher and I haven't given the sign yet and then I touch the indicator right there, if my left ear is the pickoff, now the catcher knows to call the pickoff play for the pitcher. And it could be a runner at second base or it could be a runner at first base, so whichever base they want to go to. If the coach gives the sign in this manner, touches it and goes to the opposite ear for say, that could be the pitch out sign. And so now we know the pitch out sign is on because maybe the coach saw something in either the third base coach or the runner kind of tipping it off that he's running. So we want to pitch out and have a greater chance of getting that second runner going to second base or third base. Now, the way the catcher relays this to the pitcher is when they're in the squatting position. Normally, you want your catcher to hold their glove right here on the left side of their knee to where the third base coach can't see, and you want to be enclosed enough to where the first base coach can't see, because in baseball, it's a game within a game, and if the catcher's going to show this and the third base coach is able to see that, they might pick up that and know what pitches are coming and maybe have a system on how to relay that to the hitter so they know what pitch is coming, because hitting and pitching, the art of pitching is keeping the batter off balance and have their timing all messed up. And if we don't let them, if they don't know what pitch is coming, it's to our advantage. So it's important for the catcher to make sure he holds his glove near his left knee to hide that sign from the third base coach, and then also bring his right knee in from the first base coach. Now, if I had just given the sign where I touched my hat and went to my indicator for fastball, normally in baseball, the number one would represent fastball, two would be curve, three would be third pitch, whatever that might be, four could be a pickoff, and we can talk about that in a second, or a pitch out. You could do it in a manner of ways. You could just circle your hands, you could make fists, or however you want to do that as a team. But for example, if I had just called the fastball and the catcher has got the signal, now the next thing is he's just going to probably hide it and show the number one with nobody on base. Okay. Now what he wants to do after that is maybe set up with location, whether it's inside, outside, up or down, by maybe giving the fastball and just tapping it to his left for being inside if it's a right-handed batter, or tapping this way to go on this side of the plate. And it's important that we don't do a lot of movement with our wrist, because if we, and our forearm, because if we gave one and we went like this, the coaches or even the hitter might be able to possibly see that and be able to get away from that. So we want to make sure that we show location without much hand movement to relay that. Now, if there's a runner on second base, here is another way of a team, the offense, being able to signal to the team how, or they can read what pitch they're throwing if they know how we're doing a sequence. This is when, oftentimes, if you see in a major league game, you watch the catcher when they have a runner on second base, when you see right before the pitch they're giving all their signs, you'll see them give a whole bunch. And it's like, well, they don't do that with runners on just first or third, because there's nobody on second base to come and directly view what the catcher's doing. So you might want to have a system where you do something so the opponent, the base runner, can't give a signal out from second base to give the hitter the sign. And that could be a variations of things when, and I'll go back and squat down here, but when we're in our stance, we want to maybe, if our team knows it's the second sign, so if I show, and if one's fastball, two curve, three change or whatever, if I show 3-2 and I give a couple other numbers to decoy, then if it's a second sign and the pitcher saw the two after the first sign, they know to throw a curveball. Or if they start picking up that it's second sign, you could change it to first sign. And that would have been a fastball. Or it could be your last sign. So there's a bunch of different ways to do this. And if I went last sign, I'd give a whole bunch of numbers. And then if I finished with that, then it would be fastball coming into our catcher from the pitcher. Or you could do a variation of different things. With nobody out, it could be your third sign if your team knows that. If one is out, maybe use your first sign to go. And if there's two outs, the pitcher knows with two outs, it's second sign. So you can vary that depending on what the situation is, so that the offense out at second base can't read your signs. Two easy ways, I think, to give signs is such as that, as far as for the pickoff or the pitch out. The pickoff could be just a finger without giving fastball, curveball, or anything else. It could just be a finger pointing to the base. Or it could just be a wipe of the leg, or anything you feel comfortable having your catcher relay this sign to the pitcher to pick off. So a point, a wipe of the leg, anything that you feel comfortable about, maybe going back and forth or something, that could be a possible good sign. Now the pitch out is another sign that it's up to your discretion of how you want to use that. For example, an easy visual sign is possibly just making a fist. Okay, and if the pitcher sees that, bang, it's the fist, then it's we know the pitch out sign is on, and we're gonna, as soon as the pitcher gets ready to deliver, the catcher's gonna pop up to the other side of the plate where the hitter's batting from, and we have the pitch out sign, or pitch out on. So pitch out could be this, it could be anything you want, but that's a common thing, a possible way to do it, or pick off with the point or the wipe or something in that nature. So now you've covered what you want the pitcher to do, either throw a fastball, curveball, off speed, third pitch, pitch out, pick off, or anything like that. Or you could even have another sign, which is what you want to do is possibly have a wipe off sign where you just have the pitcher shake his head no, just to give that batter some curiosity. Well, what's coming? He shook his head three times. What other pitch does he have? And that could be the number four. Heck, it could be number five. It could be a different wipe on the leg. And if he gives four, and he say four is the white, just the shake sign, heck, he can shake. If he gives it again, he shakes again. You don't want the hitter to get too comfortable. A lot of times on the 2-0 count or the 3-0 count, or 3-1 or 1-0, the hitter's thinking, okay, fastball's coming for sure because the pitcher's behind. Well, possibly give that shake-off sign once or twice, and now the hitter's thinking, well, wait a minute, he shook his head, it should be a fastball. Even though you still are probably throwing the fastball, you get in that hitter's mind a little bit and play that game within the game. Now I'm out on the pitcher's mound, and I want to relay to all you watching this video the next step of possible signs within the catcher and pitcher, and that's from the pitching mound with the pitcher giving signs to the catcher. And there's a bunch of different things that you can see here that happens on throughout a game, and you just need to know maybe why they do this and when they're doing this, what they're trying to accomplish. Obviously, if a pitcher is on the mound and the catcher gives a sign, whether it's called from the dugout from the coaching staff, or if it's just the pitcher catcher calling the game, in baseball, a lot of times you'll see the pitcher, after a sign is given, shake their head. That message to the catcher is, no, I don't want that pitch. Okay? Or you'll see the shake of the head, that's what pitch I'm going to throw. Because it's important, especially the higher levels you get up to. The catcher, it gets crossed up with the pitcher, and he calls for a curveball, and the pitcher throws a fastball, and there's a good differential in speed. That's when a catcher has difficulty catching the ball at times, because they weren't ready to react to a fastball. They were expecting an off-speed pitch coming in slower. And if the pitcher shakes, that's where he wants to do with that. If the pitcher wipes, a lot of times you'll see it maybe even in the stretch position, but you'll see a lot of times maybe just the wipe of a glove. And if you see the wipe of the glove, that might be a way of saying no without shaking the head. Or it might be the wipe might mean location, or it might mean change your location after. So if the catcher called a fastball this side, And if the pitcher shook his head and went like this, he's probably wanting to throw it to the other side or pitch it in a different location from where the catcher called. So again, it's that game within a game of the nonverbal communication of what to expect from the pitcher and out of the catcher. So that's, you know, there's a whole bunch of different things we can do, but you want to make sure that your defense and your catcher know exactly what pitch is coming. And a lot of the times then the middle infielders, if they see the pitcher shaking their head yes, and they know what the sign is coming in, then they know how to react, because if it's a fastball and it's a hitter that doesn't pull the ball, then you might see the third baseman cheat to the non-pull side, and even not just the third baseman, but the whole infield shifting to where they might need to go. Okay, the next thing we'd like to talk about is after the pitcher and catcher have talked non-verbally gotten their signs together of what they're doing, there's times where the catcher then wants to do some signs, or it could be verbal or non-verbal, to their infielders pertaining to possibly backdooring a runner. What I mean by that is if there's a runner on first, when the pitch is made, with the first baseman coming back to the bag, right when the pitch is being made, and so our catcher then, as soon as he catches it, can release the ball to first to try to get the runner out. Maybe the runner at second is getting too big of a lead, so we want to try to pick that runner off at second base. And so those are the types of different situations that we could have catchers give signs to the infielders, other than knowing what pitches are coming, fastball, curveball, changeup, with the infielders looking in to see. Now they can have other signs, such as things that we're going to demonstrate right here to you. So if there's a runner on first base, and let's say our first baseman's playing back with a runner on third also, or second, and we want to pick off that guy at first, he's just being too aggressive and getting too big of a lead. There could be some nonverbal communications. I'm going to have our catcher, Tim Kurtz, demonstrate some signs. First sign could be, if you wanted to have it, when the catcher's in his squat position looking at the first baseman, if the first baseman sees him possibly with his non-glove hand, just scoop up some dirt and throw it towards him, or wherever he might want to throw it. That could be a sign that says, we want to make sure that we know it. And then the first baseman can acknowledge that and give a sign back, whether it's a wipe of the glove on the thigh or just the tip of the hat or something else. That way we've communicated, and he knows that exactly what we're trying to do. And there's other ways of doing it. It could be a tug on the mask, if the mask was on, or it could be the touch of the back of the hat, or it could be a certain name, maybe a nickname of somebody, or anything else that could make the, if the first baseman isn't paying attention, have him verbally hear something to know it's on. For example, he could say a nickname of anybody on the field, or that player specifically, if that first baseman had a nickname. Because if you start yelling out their name, coaches know the player's position and what their names are, then they'll obviously be able to pick something up that something could be on, and they'll pay extra attention to that so that doesn't happen. So there's a game within a game here, giving signs for other things just than the pitcher catcher throwing the pitch. And again, it could be a whole bunch of different things. It could be having him hitting his glove with his hand. It could be just the, like we said, the dirt throwing, the wipe of the, or the tug of the mask, the tap of the back of the hat. But it's also nice to see the infielder give a sign back that, hey, I got it, I know it's on, so we're on the same page. And he doesn't come up to throw and there's nobody there to catch the ball. Now we're moving out to the infield, and the infielder's jobs as far as helping out the outfield, giving signs to let them know what pitch can be done in a manner of ways, and we're going to show that here in a second. It's important for the outfielders to know what pitches are coming also, especially when you see a hitter that cannot really turn or pull a fastball, and they go the opposite field a lot because their hands or their swing might not be quick enough to match up. But yet on the off-speed pitch, with that speed differential, they're able to catch up to the off-speed pitch and possibly pull it. So it's an advantage for the outfielders to know what pitch is coming each time, especially knowing what the type of hitter is and what they can do with the fastball or off-speed. So somehow we got to get them to be able to know what pitch is coming, because they can't see it from the distance from home plate out to the outfield probably. So they want to have a possible middle infielder, second baseman, shortstop giving the signs to the outfielders. Shortstop could probably give the signs to the left fielder and center fielder, and the second baseman would be able to relay the sign to the right fielder. We don't want to tip it off too much, so we got to be careful there, because as soon as we show a pitch and if the batter the middle infielder shows a fastball, and all of a sudden they see the outfielder sprinting over to the opposite field side, the hitter might pick up on that and know what is coming. So it's got to be done discreetly without too much fast movement and just being aware of what's happening. And also the infielder has to be very deceptive, because third base, first base coaches could be looking for that. And I'll show you what I mean by that and how they can see what the infielder's calling just by the way the infielder finishes with their signs. Now, I'm going to have Levi here demonstrate with his back turned to you if the pitcher or the catcher calls a fastball or a curveball, what's the difference. And what he's going to do is put his hand somewhere right in the back of the middle of his back, so it's still not seen from the opposing team dugout or third base coach. And there's a different ways of giving fastball or curveball. Here, we would probably just give the sign fastball or off speed, meaning curveball, changeup, split finger, something that is not as fast as his fastball, because it's going to be kind of hard for an outfielder another 150 feet away to possibly see little things. So we're going to just give right for now. And if you think you can get away with giving different exact pitches, whether it's split finger or changeup other than the curveball, then please feel free to try those. But what I'm going to show you right here is if Levi's looking in at the catcher and he sees the catcher call the sign number one for fastball, Levi is going to call the pitch to the outfielders. And here's how we would do it, with the fist being a fastball and the open hand being the off-speed pitch. So he's looking in and bang, he sees the number one. So right now, right before he gets in his ready position, he's going to give the pitch to the outfielders and then he's going to set up for the pitch. So now our outfielders know what pitch is coming and he's ready to play defense. Now if the pitch is a 2 or a 3 or 4, whatever the off-speed pitch is, he's going to show it by doing that motion right there. So as soon as the outfielder sees an open hand, he knows that he's going to throw an off-speed pitch. And then you can be even more creative with this by, if you see location, if you see a curveball away, most of the time the hitter hopefully is going to hit it to up the middle or to the opposite field because of the location. So he could give a sign of possibly open hand for curveball, and then just right at the last second, without showing much elbow movement or wrist movement, just kind of flash it to the opposite side for a right-handed batter. Now if it was a left-handed batter and it was going to be an outside pitch, he would call pitch, whether it's fastball or curveball, and then he would finish by going to the direction of where the location is. Then he brings his hand back. The thing that you have to be careful about as an infielder is not letting the third base coach see what sign you called after you called it, because a lot of times a shortstop or second baseman will go ahead and give a sign and then they'll come back with that sign in their hand, or they'll come back with it'll be open. So the infielder needs to be consistent however they bring it back, their hand back for defense, that it never changes. So if he calls curveball, he might just make a fist at the end. Or if he calls fastball, he'll still keep it like that. So every time he comes back to his position, his hand is always the same. Because if the infielder isn't deceiving enough, they could tip off the signs just by giving it to the coach or the dugout. So again, the deception's involved, the game within the game is involved, and there's a lot of things that we gotta be careful for. Our next step in this defensive video is to talk about fly ball communication and how to get it across to your team so that there's safety involved, so nobody's running into each other, and then you could probably do or catch one of the easiest balls in baseball, and that is a pop-up. Oftentimes it seems easy, but it is difficult because people don't communicate, they're worried about another fielder running into each other. So we want to spend a few minutes here talking about that. The first thing we want to talk about is priorities. And what I mean by priority is who in the infield or the outfield has priority over the other fielders. And our rule of thumb as I coach is the center fielder is king of the mountain. And what I mean by that is if he calls for the ball, then he is responsible and everybody else needs to know to get out of the way, because the center fielder has priority over both of the other two outfielders, all of the infielders. And that's what we mean by priority. Left fielder, all outfielders have priority over the infielders. So then if the left fielder calls for the ball and the center fielder doesn't, third base and shortstop know that the outfielder has priority and they get out of the way. And right fielder calls for the ball, if it's hit into right field, then first and second baseman know the right fielder's in that position to catch the ball. But if the center fielder ever calls out off anybody, it's their ball to call. When you go into the infield now, as far as an infield pop-up, the shortstop is usually your best athlete or one of your best athletes, and you want them to be in charge of the pop fly. So if they call for it, it's theirs, third baseman, shortstop, or excuse me, third baseman, second baseman, pitcher, everybody else knows that it's shortstops. Third baseman has priority over the shortstop, pitcher, and catcher. Second baseman has priority over first, second, or excuse me, first, pitcher, and catcher. First baseman has priority over the pitcher and catcher. Pitcher has no priority in most situations with the catcher. If the catcher calls it off of the pitcher, and then the pitcher has to get out of the way. Catcher has priority only over the pitcher. It's a hard, pop-ups are harder for the catchers to catch than infielders. So how do we communicate this? We like to use really quick word syllables such as me, 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 I, or however you feel comfortable, ball, ball, ball. But you don't want to get into long sentences like the old traditional way of I've got it, I've got it, I've got it, because then you got a possible another infielder or outfielder calling it and saying the same three words. It could get confusing. So if we go real quick, short words such as me, 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 you, and you, meaning you take it since you called for it, you have priority, and that gives that infielder or outfielder assurance that they're not going to be ran over trying to catch a fly ball or pop up. Okay, so the next thing we want to do is then, if there is a pop-up between Levi and Josh here, and Josh being a first baseman and Levi being a second baseman, if they're going for a ball, and we'll have to imagine a fly ball being hit right now, and if they're coming together, and if he's second baseman being the right-hander here and the left-hander here being the first baseman, he automatically knows that if he calls for the ball, he's going to let him know that he has it by saying you. Communicating the game before the ball is caught, and to have no injuries and make sure that we catch the ball. So if we can imagine a ball coming right here in the middle of them, and if they're conversing towards the ball, if Josh calls for it, and Levi goes, me, 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 that means Josh will get out of the way.
Me, me, me.
You.
And now we'll catch up the pop fly that would be coming down. Okay, that's just the simple way of so that both of these guys know. Or if Josh is calling for the ball and Levi says, oh, it's an easy one for him to catch, so I'm going to reassure him that I'm not going to catch it, Josh will call me, me, me.
Me, me, me.
You.
And he will relay you. And that gives him the confidence knowing going out to catch it. Very important thing to do, communication. We practice fly ball communication once a week just to keep going over this so we avoid injuries and also help that pitcher out by catching a hitter's mistake, popping it up. Now we're out in the outfield, and we want to talk real quickly on fly ball communication. A lot of times outfielders with so much space out here have to run as hard as they can just to get to a ball, and they're not sure if they can call the ball. For example, if Ben's center field and Kyle here is right field, they're not sure if they could just call for the ball when they have to run another 100 feet or 150 feet to catch it. So a lot of times outfielders won't commit too soon and call for it in case they can't get there. So we're going to show you a technique to use to avoid collisions, and that's one of the ugliest things you can see in baseball is when you see an outfielder with either an infielder or another outfielder running full speed, running into each other. There's been career-ending injuries from that, balls dropped out in the outfield, or injuries that take a player out for the rest of the season. So there is a technique to teach your outfielders to avoid this situation of contact with one another. And what it is, other than not calling fly ball, me, 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 you type of situation communication, we're going to do a nonverbal way of not committing to contact to each other. And that is, we have a rule of thumb, when a ball is hit into a gap where the two outfielders are running close to each other, of who should catch it where. And what I mean by that is the center fielder's rule of thumb is always when they're running full speed and they know a right fielder or a left fielder is coming in after at the ball too, that they are going to try to catch the ball in a higher position than the left or right fielder. And what I mean by that is if I'm running and I have my glove up to catch it in a, like above my belt area, then that's the trajectory of where my body is running for the ball, where the left or right fielder, such as Kyle here, would be running and trying to catch it in a lower position. What happens there is then he will be at least 3 to 5 feet away from the center fielder because he's trying to catch it lower and the center fielder is trying to catch it up higher. And we're going to demonstrate that real quickly with these two coming in a walk, and we don't want to do it in a running position. But Ben being the center fielder and Kyle being the right fielder, Ben is going to attempt to catch the ball up in a higher position. And we can show you that, first of all, without any movement, where if the ball is hit right here, and if Ben's going to catch it in a high position, he would be right here. If the ball's hit here, and if Kyle's going to catch it in a low position, he obviously would, and it's coming downward, he would have his mitt down in this position to catch it. what we've done right there is we've created an open lane because he's catching it low and he's going to catch it high. So if the center fielder catches it, great, we got the out. But if he doesn't and the right fielder gets to the ball and catches it here, we still have the out. But the biggest thing, you can put your mitt down, is there's no collision. And that's what we want to avoid. Now we're going to have these two kind of walk in, and I'll center, imagine my fist being where the baseball will be landing if they don't catch it. Okay, so you guys kind of walk out there and Kyle walk out there. So if the ball is hit and it's going to end up right here, and obviously the trajectory of the ball is coming downward, Ben knows where to go for the ball as a center fielder coming in from this direction up high, Kyle knowing that the ball is going to end up here. And now we've probably got a good 10 feet of distance between the two, no injury, and hopefully the ball is going to be caught by one of the two, and one of them didn't commit to calling the ball. And this one, this say for example, Kyle then heard Ben call me, 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 so he didn't even try to catch it, but Ben never could get to it. Now we can still try to get to that ball hitting the gap. That could be a tough play, and we've avoided contact. Now we're going to work on pickoffs, and we're going to just show some what the actual pickoff is and why we do it. Obviously, a pickoff is to create the play in baseball to not let the opponent steal on you, and so we want to be deceptive. We want to be on task and pick off enough to where that runner at first doesn't get comfortable. So the pickoff in baseball is a vital tool to hold the offense at bay and not let them get too aggressive and advance into scoring position or from scoring second base to third base. So right now we're going to show you the pickoff at first base and the importance of it. One thing I want to stress here is runners will often run on the pitcher on two different accounts. Maybe a high leg kick and slow delivery to the plate, which makes it harder for the catcher to throw the runner out, or the pitcher gets in a set rhythm. So when the pitcher gets in a set rhythm, and what I mean by rhythm is if I was a left-handed pitcher, and if I come up and I come up to the set position, and I go to the plate on every certain count, like I come to the set position, I might pause 1,001, boom, and I go. Offenses can, base stealers can get in that rhythm and then they could leave on certain things. And let me give you an analogy of a way to count. It could be what we use is a UCLA method. And our base runners, when they come to a set, will say it to themselves, UCLA. And what I mean by that is every time if he comes to the set and when he always leaves on the C in UCLA, we know when to possibly take off for the attempt to second base. If the pitcher has one rhythm only. So we teach our pitchers to make sure they come into the set position and vary their timing to the plate, whether it be on U or C or L or A, or even hold it longer than that, just so the runner doesn't get in too comfortable with when the pitcher's going to the plate. Because if I was in this position and I go on the UCLA, and I come to on the L, U, C, right before the base runner says L, he's going to probably take off to get into that good jump. Base stealing, you don't have to be fast. If you can get good jumps, that's a big part of the game. So we want to teach and make sure our pitchers work on certain different timings. Now I'm going to have Levi here demonstrate some pickoff different moves, and I'm going to have him change his rhythm, and you'll hear my voice on the microphone while he does this. Now as a pitcher, we can come in on at any time over to throw. We can come up when our hands are, we can throw over when our hands are coming up. We can come over before we set or after the set. So we can vary our timing of when we throw over. So right now we're going to do the basic pickoff. Levi's going to come to the set position and throw over. Okay. Now he's going to throw over in a different time. So that might have been on the UC. Maybe time this at home when he comes to the set position when he's coming over. Right there, I would have counted on the A of UCLA, which is my arch rival school where I played at USC. So now he could be coming over right when his hands come up. Just a quick move. And another way to frustrate the runner at first for their timing is to go ahead and get into the set position, like Levi will do right here. And now he's just going to hold it. He's going to stay in this position until either the batter calls time or the runner at first calls time. So what we just showed to the runner is, hey, he could come over at any time or he could wait forever. So if you try to get an early jump, he's in the position right now. If the guy just takes off, just to step off the rubber And now we have a pickoff play or a pickle play in between first and second. So the pickoff is a good arsenal. It's something that needs to be practiced. You just don't want your pitchers to go out and just be able to attempt to do this without a lot of repetition. Now we're going to the pickoff at second base. There's a variation of different pickoffs you want to do just to, again, assure that you don't let that runner advance to third base or get too comfortable with a big primary and secondary lead on a bunt situation. So we have a few different pickoff throws we're going to show and how to communicate with that with the middle infielders or even the catcher calling a pickoff sign at second base. The first thing is a timing pickoff. And what I mean by a timing pickoff is if Ben was going to get on the rubber here and one of these infielders gave a signal, now again, going a game within the game, giving signals non-verbally. If an infielder gave a signal such as if he wipes his chest with his mitt, that means the timing pickoff play would be on. He could do a lot of things with his hand, just not touching his chest or not touching his chest with his glove. And if he wipes with his glove per se, then that now that relays to this pitcher that, hey, we're going to do a time pickoff. And what we mean by a time pickoff is it's going to be in order so that when the ball shows up to second base, either the shortstop or second baseman is just now getting to the bag and tagging the runner out. Because if the shortstop or second baseman gets to the bag and is waiting, obviously the runner at second will want to get in close to the bag because the shortstop or second baseman is in pickoff range and we want to get closer. Because you can get more on a lead in second base because there's further distance and you don't have somebody just standing on the bag all the time like you do at first base. So what we're going to do here is give a time pickoff. Let's just say our infielder just showed the wipe of the glove to the chest. That is an indication, okay, we have a time pickoff. Maybe our time pickoff is two seconds after the set position by our pitcher. The pitcher knows after he goes 1,001, 1,002, he's going to turn and pick. On 1,001, maybe our middle infielder will break for the bag because right now we're 30 feet from the second base bag. So if he just called the pickoff and if 1,001 is when we both count, the pitcher and the infielder counts after the set position is in place. And 1,001, that's when our middle infielder is going to break to the bag, and on 1,002, our pitcher is going to turn and throw. That timing should be about right to get the ball to the bag at the same time the infielder is showing up at the bag and getting that out infielder or that runner at second base tagged out. So if it's 1,002, I come to the set position. I haven't been there yet. I'm here right now. I'm going to count 1,001, 1,002, and I break to the bag to pick. The middle infielder, as soon as I come to the set position, 1,001, he's breaking to the bag while he's still counting another second to do his move. So we'll demonstrate this right now. The automatic time pickoff play is on, and we'll have our second baseman come in from this play. And right there, we created a quick, deceitful play because it's all bang, bang. It's not somebody waiting for the throw to come and have happen. It's really important, too, for infielders to, like if you're deer hunting, you want to have quiet feet so the deer don't hear. Well, in baseball, you want to have quiet feet so the infielder, the runner doesn't hear it. A lot of times, the coaches on the corners can yell, back one, meaning for the infielder or the runner to take a step back to the bag. But if it's really quick, it's hard for that fraction of a second for that coach to relay that sign to the runner at second. So this is a very good play. Another move we could have here is what we call the spaghetti move. And it's another deceitful move where it looks to the runner like our pitcher is going to the plate, but yet we have a pickoff play on. And this might be when the knee gets to its highest point is when our infielder breaks to the bag. And what this pitcher is going to do, and I'll take you through a mechanical step-by-step, and I'll hold Ben here to have viewers get a good idea of what we're trying to accomplish here. But the spaghetti move is basically the wraparound deceitful move to second base where it looks at first the pitcher's going to the plate. But through the rule book, you're allowed to bring up your knee to a certain point. As long as you don't do any movement forward, if you can bring your leg up and even back towards the ports directly down and then wrap it around to make it look like you're going to the plate, but you haven't did anything directed towards the plate, but yet in a runner's eye, it might look like that. So in a spaghetti move, we'll have, before we have the throw, we'll just demonstrate it here with the pitcher's part of this play. He's gonna come to the set position, he's gonna pick up, he's gonna hold it, he's gonna bring it back down, and now he's just gonna wrap around. Now this is a left-hander. Left-handers or right-handers can do this. the more they practice this at home, the better their move can be. If they just come out to the mound and when the play is on, for example, instead of the wipe across the chest with the glove, it could be a wipe across the belt with the glove, or a wipe down the leg, however you guys want to communicate this sign. But this has got to be something that they practice with the infielder. A good time for the infielder to break to the bag on this would be possibly right before the knee gets to its highest point. And then the timing is there, so he's not standing on the bag waiting for the throw. So we want to make sure that we're deceitful. We show that we're going up, possibly back down, and then a wraparound move. Some pitchers can do this so well, they pick off a lot of players there. And what they do there is help their earned run average by getting the out that's in scoring position. So here we'll go ahead and do this on a timed play. Now our infielder knows to go when the knee gets to its highest point. And that is a wraparound, or we call it the spaghetti move. Pickoffs are very important. We got to keep that runner close to the bag. We don't want him to score on a single. We don't want him to advance on third on a bunt if possible. Very important for this pitcher here to hold and change his rhythms or his looks at second base. And what I mean by that is if the pitcher gets in a habit, if Ben was a, we call it a 1P, a one look guy at second base, if he gets in that position every time where he comes up into the set position and he's just going to look at the runner once, and after he looks at him, he always goes home without any other looks, good base runners will pick up on that and know after he looks once, if the pickoff play isn't on, which you maybe 5% of the time you have a pickoff play on at second base with a runner out there, the runner's going to be able to get extra secondary leads to steal third base. So we've got to make sure our pitchers vary their looks, whether it be no looks, one look, two looks, three looks, however many looks you want to do. Here's another way to communicate to your infielder, or with your infielder to the pitcher, by maybe doing how many times he goes to his face with his open hand. If he's given all these signs and he goes to his face twice, now our infielders know and the pitcher knows, I'm going to look twice at second base before I go to the plate. If he gives it three times, or if he doesn't go to his face, then it's no looks. But if we let that runner get in a situation where he knows how many times this pitcher looks, you watch it, coaches. You watch those pitchers on the opposing team, and you can start getting a bigger lead and stealing third base, which is a hard base to steal if you don't know how to do it correctly. So we want to make sure that we do that. So we're going to change our looks, where the first time he looked once, now he might just look three times. And he could do it quickly or take his time. In baseball, there's no clock going, so he can always just vary his looks. And also vary his timing. Let's say if he wanted to look only one time, okay, he gets into the set position, he's going to look once, but now he's just going to hold that set longer. Now this runner doesn't know what to do. He might look back, so he's going to stay close to the bag, then he can go to the plate. So rhythm and looks are very important to teach our middle infielders and pitcher to do. And if the infielder knows that we're going to look three times, he could jockey to the base for the first two times because he knows there's no pickoff and he's not going to the plate right away, and he can get back to cover his position as properly as possible. So make sure that you spend time working on timing pickoffs so our infielders are in sequence and we know when to break, pitchers know when to throw, spaghetti moves are in play. I talked one real quickly, I'll add one more thing. We could have a play from the coach giving the sign to the catcher on a pickoff play done by maybe just having the catcher, when the catcher possibly just hits his glove while the pitcher is in the set position. When he hits his glove, that's showing the pitcher, okay, and he's just staring at the catcher right now. He's not even looking back. That when he hits his glove, that means right when he hits it, he's going to turn and throw to second base for the pickoff. So he's not even looking, and he's not never gave one look back, but right now the catcher gives a sign and the pitcher's looking for it, bang, he hits his glove, and the infielder is always already broke. So that the timing of this is critical for the catcher. When he hits his glove, he wants the pitcher to pick off right then, because the infielder is going to be there right in on time for that throw if they do it right when he claps his glove. So for example, I'll just stand right back here and I'll clap my hand and the pitcher's looking at me, and I'm going to go on as a catcher. I'm going on when the infielder is going, when it's time for the pitcher to pick off, because I'm looking at the infielder right here. Alrighty, here we go. I'm watching my infielder. Could just be a tap of the glove and bang, we have that. Now that's just another way to do a timing pickoff where we're not even looking at the runner, and we're in a different rhythm of a possible 1,001 than pickoff on 1,002. So there is creative ways to accomplish this and get this taken care of. Now we're going to the pickoff at second base. There's a variation of different pickoffs you want to do just to, again, assure that you don't let that runner advance to third base or get too comfortable with a big primary and secondary lead on a bunt situation. So we have a few different pickoff throws we're going to show and how to communicate with that with the middle infielders or even the catcher calling a pickoff sign at second base. The first thing is a timing pickoff. And what I mean by a timing pickoff is if Ben was going to get on the rubber here and one of these infielders gave a signal, now again, going a game within the game, giving signals non-verbally. If an infielder gave a signal such as if he wipes his chest with his mitt, that means the timing pickoff play would be on. He could do a lot of things with his hand, just not touching his chest or not touching his chest with his glove. And then if he wipes with his glove per se, then that relays to this pitcher that, hey, we're going to do a time pickoff. And what we mean by a time pickoff is it's going to be in order so that when the ball shows up to second base, either the shortstop or second baseman is just now getting to the bag and tagging the runner out. Because if the shortstop or second baseman gets to the bag and is waiting, obviously the runner at second will want to get in close to the bag because the shortstop or second baseman is in pickoff range and we want to get closer. Because you can get more on a lead in second base because there's further distance and you don't have somebody just standing on the bag all the time like you do at first base. So what we're going to do here is give a time pickoff. Let's just say our infielder just showed the wipe of the glove to the chest. That is an indication, okay, we have a time pickoff. Maybe our time pickoff is on two seconds after the set position by our pitcher. The pitcher knows after he goes 1,001, 1,002, he's going to turn and pick. On 1,001, maybe our middle infielder will break for the bag because right now we're 30 feet from the second base bag. So if he just called the pickoff and if 1,001 is when we both count, the pitcher and the infielder counts after the set position is in place. And 1,001, that's when our middle infielder is going to break to the bag, and on 1,002, our pitcher's going to turn and throw. That timing should be about right to get the ball to the bag at the same time the infielder is showing up at the bag and getting that out infielder or that runner at second base tagged out. So if it's 1,002, I come to the set position. I haven't been there yet. I'm here right now. I'm going to count 1,001, 1,002, and I break to the bag to pick. The middle infielder, as soon as I come to the set position, 1,001, he's breaking to the bag while he's still counting another second to do his move. So we'll demonstrate this right now. The automatic time pickoff play is on, and we'll have our second baseman come in from this play. And right there, we created a quick, deceitful play because it's all bang, bang. It's not somebody waiting for the throw to come and have happen. It's really important, too, for infielders to, like if you're deer hunting, you want to have quiet feet so the deer don't hear. Well, in baseball, you want to have quiet feet so the runner doesn't hear it. A lot of times, the coaches on the corners can yell, back one, meaning for the infielder or the runner to take a step back to the bag. But if it's really quick, it's hard for that fraction of a second for that coach to relay that sign to the runner at second. So this is a very good play. Another move we could have here is what we call the spaghetti move. And it's another deceitful move where it looks to the runner like our pitcher is going to the plate, but yet we have a pickoff play on. And this might be when the knee gets to its highest point is when our infielder breaks to the bag. And what this pitcher is going to do, and I'll take you through a mechanical step-by-step, and I'll hold Ben here to have viewers get a good idea of what we're trying to accomplish here. But the spaghetti move is basically the wraparound deceitful move to second base where it looks at first the pitcher's going to the plate. But through the rule book, you're allowed to bring up your knee to a certain point. As long as you don't do any movement forward, if you can bring your leg up and even back towards the ports directly down and then wrap it around to make it look like you're going to the plate, but you haven't did anything directed towards the plate, but yet in a runner's eye, it might look like that. So in a spaghetti move, we'll have, before we have the throw, we'll just demonstrate it here with the pitcher's part of this play. He's gonna come to the set position, he's gonna pick up, he's gonna hold it, he's gonna bring it back down, and now he's just gonna wrap around. Now this is a left-hander. Left-handers or right-handers can do this. The more they practice this at home, the better their move can be. If they just come out to the mound and when the play is on, for example, instead of the wipe across the chest with the glove, it could be a wipe across the belt with the glove or a wipe down the leg, however you guys want to communicate this sign. But this has got to be something that they practice with the infielder. A good time for the infielder to break to the bag on this would be possibly right before the knee gets to its highest point. And then the timing is there so he's not standing on the bag waiting for the throw. So we want to make sure that we're deceitful. We show that we're going up, possibly back down, and then a wraparound move. Some pitchers can do this so well, they pick off a lot of players there. And what they do there is help their earned run average by getting the out that's in scoring position. So here we'll go ahead and do this on a timed play. Now our infielder knows to go when the knee gets to its highest point. And that is a wraparound, or we call it the spaghetti move. Pickoffs are very important. We got to keep that runner close to the bag. We don't want him to score on a single. We don't want him to advance on third on a bunt if possible. Very important for this pitcher here to hold and change his rhythms or his looks at second base. And what I mean by that is if the pitcher gets in a habit, if Ben was a, we call it a 1P, a one look guy at second base, if he gets in that position every time where he comes up into the set position and he's just going to look at the runner once, and after he looks at him, he always goes home without any other looks, good base runners will pick up on that and know after he looks once, if the pickoff play isn't on, which you maybe 5% of the time you have a pickoff play on at second base with a runner out there, the runner's going to be able to get extra secondary leads to steal third base. So we've got to make sure our pitchers vary their looks, whether it be no looks, one look, two looks, three looks, however many looks you want to do. Here's another way to communicate to your infielder or with your infielder to the pitcher by maybe doing how many times he goes to his face with his open hand. If he's given all these signs and he goes to his face twice, now our infielders know and the pitcher knows I'm going to look twice at second base before I go to the plate. If he gives it three times or if he doesn't go to his face, then it's no looks. But if we let that runner get in a situation where he knows how many times this pitcher looks, you watch it, coaches. You watch those pitchers on the opposing team, and you can start getting a bigger lead and stealing third base, which is a hard base to steal if you don't know how to do it correctly. So we want to make sure that we do that. So we're going to change our looks. Where the first time he looked once, now he might just look three times. And he could do it quickly or take his time. In baseball, there's no clock going, so he can always just vary his looks. And also vary his timing. Let's say if he wanted to look only one time, okay, he gets into the set position, he's going to look once, but now he's just going to hold that set longer. Now this runner doesn't know what to do. He might look back, so he's going to stay close to bag, then he can go to the plate. So rhythm and looks are very important to teach our middle infielders and pitcher to do. And if the infielder knows that we're going to look three times, he could jockey to the base for the first two times because he knows there's no pickoff and he's not going to the plate right away, and he can get back to cover his position as properly as possible. So make sure that you spend time working on timing pickoffs so our infielders are in sequence and we know when to break, pitchers know when to throw, spaghetti moves are in play. I talked one real quickly, I'll add one more thing. We could have a play from the coach giving the sign to the catcher on a pickoff play done by maybe just having the catcher, when the catcher possibly just hits his glove while the pitcher is in the set position. When he hits his glove, that's showing the pitcher, okay, and he's just staring at the catcher right now. He's not even looking back. That when he hits his glove, that means right when he hits it, he's going to turn and throw to second base for the pickoff. So he's not even looking, and he's not never gave one look back, but right now the catcher gives a sign and pitcher's looking for it, bang, all of a sudden he hits his glove, and the infielder is already broke. So that the timing of this is critical for the catcher. When he hits his glove, he wants the pitcher to pick off right then, because the infielder is going to be there right in on time for that throw if they do it right when he claps his glove. So for example, I'll just stand right back here and I'll clap my hand and the pitcher's looking at me, and I'm going to go on as a catcher. I'm going on when the infielder is going, when it's time for the pitcher to pick off, because I'm looking at the infielder right here. Alrighty, here we go. I'm watching my infielder. Could just be a tap of the glove and bang, we have that. Now that's just another way to do a timing pickoff where we're not even looking at the runner. And we're in a different rhythm of a possible 1,001 than pickoff on 1,002. So there is creative ways to accomplish this and get this taken care of. It's over here, Josh. It's over here. It's over here. Go two. And right there, we just have an out because the pitcher then shows the ball to the umpire, and he is out. This is the trick University of Miami play that they pulled off in the College World Series. Okay, now we're going to move into how the coach can relay to the infielders or outfielders where to position themselves because of the way we're going to pitch a batter and possibly the tendencies of the hitter where they like to hit the ball. We'll start with the infielders. We have a system of whether to play up even with the bag, back a little bit, or deep. We'll do it either by the number 1, 2, or 3. They'll look in, okay? And if I just hold up the number 2, that's the way we communicate, okay, that we're playing not up on the grass or even with the bags, but a little bit off out of the baseline, a little deeper. If I hold up the number 3, they're back towards the outfield edge of the grass, playing deep, making sure the ball doesn't go through. And if we hold up the 1, they're up, ready to throw the runner out at the plate, or the first baseman and third baseman maybe only. I show the 1 to those guys, and they're playing up for a possible drag bunt or bunt situation. So that's it. And then if we want to move them to the left or the right, we can just do either hand motions this way, or I can say take away the 6 hole to the shortstop, meaning to shift over a little bit towards third base. Or if we want to have the second baseman come over and play in the 4 hole, we might say, you know, shade the 4 hole, meaning get over towards the first baseman more and take away that area of the field for that position of that hitter. Or pinch the middle, meaning pinch the towards both infielders, pinch up towards the middle of the play. So that's some simple, easy, familiar communications to the infielders of how to position themselves and where to play. Moving out to the outfield, a lot of times you don't want to yell and you want to just do it by signs. And the way we've done it, where it's easy, if we want the infielders to play more shallow, this means in. If we want them to play back, we'll go up behind the head and go back like this, meaning deep and up. And then if we want them over to the, say, to towards the right side of the field, we might take it over here, and to my right, I'll motion this way, and they know to back up and over to your right, or come in to your right, or opposite way, going back to this side, or back to that side, or into that side. So that meaning in, back, sides, meaning in that, those two different directions. But this is easy for our infielders or outfielders to know that this is just come in, go back, and so on. And again, you're not having to shout from the dugout and lose your voice, or they might not be able to hear you, but they can see this, and it's an easy teach tool. So those are ways to communicate to your infielders and outfielders how to position themselves better than where they're at. Defensive bunt coverages. And what we want to display here is maybe 2 or 3 different types of bunt coverages. One being the standard traditional book way cover a bunt. If there's a runner on first base, right when the pitcher comes to the set and the batter's showing bunt, the third baseman would creep in, shortstop start cheating towards second base for that throw. If we can get the runner out at second, second baseman start creeping over to first base, and the first baseman can't do much because he has to stay there in case we have the pickoff throw on. So that would be a standard bunt coverage for the runner on first base. Now, if we want to do a different play where we're able to get in with the corners, the first and third baseman's in, to take that bunt away, we want to get that out at second base. There might be a play on where if we just call the number 2, or we'll have a signal or a sign, or maybe do a number sequence like 724, meaning the middle number is 2. If we did 714, the middle number 1 being the standard play, 2 being the next hot play, or we can do colors or however you want to feel comfortable communicating that to your infielders to know what plays on. Our possible second play on a bunt coverage with the runner on first base could be when the pitcher comes to the set. Right when he gets the set, the first baseman and the third baseman are already charging in. There's no pickoff play at first base, and we're going to attempt to get the first baseman in close too to pick up this bunt and throw to second base with the shortstop. Another play caught possibly, and this play can work, is where you have the same play on, but let's call this the third play. So we could say yell out 734, the middle number being the hot number, and that's the number 3. This play could be where you have the first baseman and third baseman doing the identical thing they just did right when the pitcher comes to the set, and they're charging to the plate. But we're going to have a pitch out on, so they cannot bunt the ball. And as soon as the pitch out's on, the second baseman is sprinting to first base to backdoor the runner. Oftentimes on a bunt situation, you have the runners at first or second getting a bigger than normal secondary lead. And with the pitch out play on, the catcher's already getting in the position to throw, the first baseman, and he's getting off probably more because the first baseman left early, and we're going to possibly deceive that runner, and then we have the pitch out, the second baseman covering, and bang, we have that backdoor throw to first base to get the runner out because the batter won't be able to bunt it because it's a pitch out. So those are some trick, that's a trick play that you could possibly do on a regular coverage. Now with runners on first and second, the standard play for a bunt, so the one play possibly could be with the runners on first or second or just second base, you need to have your third baseman hold his water, stay where he's at third base, because if he charges to the play, what happens if they have the runner at second steal? There's nobody there covering third base. So we want to make sure the third baseman stays and protects his area. On this play, normally you wouldn't have the first baseman holding a runner on, so they could be cheating up on the grass and ready to go in as soon as they see the batter's hands do the bunt. And then the pitcher knows that his responsibility is after he pitches the ball to take the third base side because the third baseman's staying back and holding his ground. Now, if it's a hard bunt to the third base, then obviously the third baseman then will have to come up, feel the bunt, and throw the and get the out at first base and give up the advancement of the runner from second to third. So that would be a standard bunt play with the shortstop going to basically back up second base if the runner doesn't go, or the second baseman charging to be the first baseman because the first baseman is committed in, and the pitcher taking the third base side of the field after he releases the ball to the bunted batter. A trick play here, again, would be a pickoff play. And you could call a pickoff play whether it be a spaghetti move that we talked about earlier in the video, or a timing pickoff, or you could do a play where you have the shortstop come in, run in towards the runner, come on the inside of the runner, and then just sprint to third base, so we have a guy covering third base where you have the runner at third, or the third baseman, excuse me, charging, because now the shortstop's going to cover third base. The second baseman can come in for the pickoff play because they see all that movement, and maybe have a pickoff play on, or have that situation where the shortstop cuts in front of the runner and sprints to third. As long as he's ahead of the runner, second baseman goes to first base to cover in case they throw to first base for the out, and the first baseman and third baseman are crashing in. This is another way to get both corners in on the bunt. So this is a play that we're saying we do not want that bunter to get, or the runner from second to get to third. So that's another possible bunt coverage. Okay, right now we're going to demonstrate the number two or the number three play with a runner on second base and bunt situation. What we're going to accomplish here is we want to visually show you what we mean by the shortstop coming in and around the runner and sprinting to third, and what the second runner or the second baseman can do on this play. Then if we don't have the pickoff on, then the second baseman knows as soon as the pitch is made, he's sprinting to first base to cover because the corners, first and third baseman, are charging in for the bunt. So right now we're going to pretend that we have a pitcher on the mound and we have, say, the number three play on. 734, middle number being the hot number. And what we're going to do here is our second baseman's going to pretend that we have the pick on, so he's going to break to the bag after the shortstop comes around the runner. And you'll see this right now. So that is our pickoff play. To try to get that runner, and we're trying to trick him by having the movement by the shortstop, and when he sees the third baseman, the first baseman charging in, maybe he'll feel more comfortable. Now it's the same play, but we have our number two play on, where we're actually pitching the ball to the plate. So our second baseman knows he's going to fake like the pickoff's on, then he's going to sprint to first, and the shortstop continues all the way to the bag. And there's our coverage right there with our first and third basemans charging the plate, our second baseman covering the bag at first, and our shortstop covering the bag at third for the possible throw to third base. Hopefully they bunt the ball here, because if they don't bunt the ball, there's nobody in the middle of the field. So we're gambling that they're bunting. Okay, the last things we're going to show you here on this defensive video is how to give signs to your infielders, pitcher and catcher, on the first and third defensive strategy. Now, in other videos that we've done, we've talked about the offense. Now we want to be able to defend it properly. I want to just basically give you four different possibilities of signs and plays to do to accomplish this goal. The first play being with runners on first and third, giving the sign that all we're going to do is our first third baseman are going to stay where they're at, and one of our infielders is going to stay where they're at, and the other middle infielder is going to cover the bag, and we're just going to try to get the out at second base on the steal. So that could be an indicator be in the hat, and we could have it be a wipe down the chest, means just a straight throw through to second base, no other cuts. A second possible play is we don't want that runner at third to score, but we don't want this runner at first to be safe at second if he doesn't try to advance home on the catcher's throw. So what we're going to do here is what may be a double cut, meaning we're going to have the second baseman cut go directly 15 feet inside of the bag, going straight towards home, with the shortstop covering the bag. And with that double cut, what that means is then when the throw is being made, the third baseman is watching what the runner at third base is doing, and if he's not going to try to advance to home, he's not going to say anything. But if he sees, as soon as the catcher releases the ball to second base and he sees the runner at third running, the third baseman's going to verbally yell 4-4-4 or home, however you want to communicate that. And that indicates to the second baseman, hey, cut the ball off 15 feet inside of the base and throw it directly back to home. So that would be our double cut situation. Maybe we don't want that runner to score, and we're going to do two other things. So we do not want the runner at third to advance. We're saying if that runner at first goes, we're going to give that base up, but we're not going to let that run score. It could be the tying run, go-ahead run, or whatever the situation may be. The third play we might have on is where the second baseman stays exactly where he is when the first runner at first steals. The shortstop is going to run from his spot at short directly in a straight line to home plate towards the catcher. The catcher then, instead of throwing it to second, is going to throw it into the shortstop coming in directly at him somewhere up near the grass. And you got to imagine the shortstop where he normally plays and coming sprinting straight towards home, not towards second base, but straight towards home. What we're trying to achieve here is the make it look deceiving for the catcher, the runner at third, is that we're throwing all the way to second base, but actually our catcher's just throwing it a short distance to a shortstop cutting in. So when he sees that ball being released by the catcher's arm, he's going to break for home, and if we have our shortstop coming in to cut the ball, it should be an easy out at home plate if he advances. If he doesn't move, then we gave up second base. We already committed that we'd do that. We just don't want this runner at third to score. And then the next play we could do is a fake throw to second, and the catcher come up in what we call a snap throw to third, or just basically you're coming up and firing to third right away. We're hoping that the runner at third is going as soon as he sees any movement towards second base or after the pitch is being made. So the catcher would be in his position ready to come up and throw to second base, but not throw it, fake the throw, and then boom, put his eyes right on the runner at third. Hopefully that runner at third took off like he thought the catcher was throwing, and now we have that runner at third in a rundown. Those are good plays to do for first and third situations, and it depends on the score and what you want to try to accomplish. Can you give up the run and get the out at second? Then you'd probably want just the straight throw through to second. If you have a 4 or 5 run lead, or if there's two outs and they don't have a stop steal sign play on, then just go ahead and throw it to second base, get the out, and you're out of the inning. If you want to make sure you get an out but you don't want the run to score, you can do the double cut play. But the bad thing about doing the double cut play is you're giving the whole 4 and 6 hole ground up for a base hit, because both the shortstop and second baseman are going towards the middle of the infield. So that's a gamble to do it that way, but it's an easy way, if the batter doesn't hit the ball, to not let the runner at third score, and if he doesn't move, to let the throw go all the way through and let the shortstop catch it and tag the runner out. So those are first and third signs. Plays, and the signs could be given indicators to the infielders, maybe the wipe of the chest being straight throw through, maybe a wipe across the chest, a double cut, maybe a wipe across the belt being the shortstop coming straight in to catch the ball, or maybe a wipe down the left leg or the right leg, meaning after the indicator, meaning the throw that we're going to fake it to second, go to third. So then the infielders know what to expect and don't give up too much ground if the ball's not coming to them. At this time, we'd like to thank you, myself, Larry Price, and Stu Southworth, on viewing this video, one of the 5 videos we've done in the series for Coach's Choice videos and books. We'd like to hope that this video will take you to the next level, to where you can apply these things to make your team the complete baseball team, whether it be offense, defense, running, or knowing the rules. So thanks again from Stu Southworth and myself, Larry Price.